So my name is Ben Lim. I lead our some people call me Blim. I lead the studio information security team here at Netflix. We've been around for many years. We started originally, as some of you may know, maybe for some of the younger folks, maybe not. We started as a DVD company, shipping DVDs to our subscribers. We then moved into the streaming product and really developing that and expanding our subscriber base globally. And I just realized something. I don't have the clicker. I think Jim's keeping a vice grip on the clicker. And so we had the streaming product for our subscribers, and we licensed a lot of great content from many of the studios that are represented here. Thank you. Just a blue. All right, there we go. And then over the past few years, we've really made a sizable investment into growing our studio capabilities and functions as a business to really create original content for our subscribers. And today what I wanted to do was just walk you through some stories around organizational culture, our approach as a studio, and why we believe that an embedded security model is really makes sense for us in tackling these challenges. So just a brief introduction, and I promise I'm not shopping my resume around here, there's a point. I started my career at Microsoft back in 2000 as an identity and PKI engineer. Things were really good, and then quickly, things got really, really bad. I see some other white hair folks in here as well, so some of us may remember things like Code Red, NIMDA. These were pretty gnarly elements. And Blaster, Sasser, I Love You, and just a whole spate of worms, viruses, and rootkits were really just attacking the ecosystem at large. And then Bill Gates came out with the very famous trustworthy computing memo, and that really helped restore a lot of the loss of confidence and trust that we were seeing within our consumers and enterprise customers. I was really privileged then at the tail end of my career to move to a unique venture with Microsoft and NYPD's Counterterrorism Bureau in developing their domain awareness system, which was intended to detect and prevent attacks against the city of New York's through the integration of a lot of unique telemetry from physical security capabilities like cameras, license plate readers, chemical, biological, radiation sensors. And boy, was this a really different security theater than I had ever operated in before. The tolerance for outages on these solutions was low. Confidentiality was paramount. And then after that, I moved over to a hedge fund, one of the world's largest hedge funds out in Connecticut called Bridgewater. And Bridgewater uses what they call a global macro investment strategy. Really fancy words for saying they bet on a lot of markets. And the way they did that was really through really smart people jamming them into a room, figuring out how the world works economically. And the way they started to deduce what investments they wanted to make, they really took a data-driven approach through risk quantification and really understand the concept of risk on the investment side. And they went one step even further. If you can see it up there, they utilized unique tools. They had a very unique culture, this concept of radical transparency and trusting in truth, where in these meetings, they would really collect telemetry in that moment around, did we think this idea was a good idea or a bad idea? Do I think you're really believable in that or not? Are you being too assertive or open-minded? So they can make sure they get the right picture of the people that are presenting those ideas, so when they make that multi-million dollar bet, they have a good understanding that it's going to work. So, much like BoJack, why does any of this matter? What I took away was something very simple, is that your organizational culture really does influence your security approach. And for Microsoft, that concept of trustworthy computing itself was a massive cultural shift. Today, we think about auto updates, not a problem. Patch Tuesday was just a novel and very controversial concept. The methods of engaging with ethical hackers and security researchers at the time was new. Today, it's not just commonplace through bug bounties. It's commoditizing through companies like HackerOne and BugCrowd. And that really set a long paved road with things like security development life cycles as well. At the NYPD, the officers and sergeants and the chiefs, they really operated with operational tightness and effectiveness. And that concept in their diligence in protecting the city really carried over into how we operationalize and secure that solution as well, by being very diligent on ensuring that the availability and confidentiality of that solution was being upheld. And at Bridgewater, they're a company based off of risk. And we took a lot of those lessons learned and really took a fundamental data-driven method to quantify an information security risk, so we knew and had confidence on where do we place our money? What investments do we place in? So I've met some of you in here But I recognize, you know, we're Netflix is the new kid here on the studio block. Some of you may have seen many of our peers present at other security conferences, but we haven't done a lot of direct sharing with you. You guys are our peers, security folks within the media and entertainment industry. And today I wanted to start that process by setting the table with some information about our emerging studio and security teams. So, I've been here for around 17 months at Netflix. You saw my career in this room. That makes me a relative neophyte, pretty young. But at Netflix, that actually puts me over 50% tenure. So I'm older than over half the company right now in 17 months. So pretty simple takeaway, right? It's really rapid growth, and the majority of that growth has been folks on our studio side, creatives, physical production folks, business and legal affairs, marketing, publicity, along with all of the engineering teams that are there to help build the applications that we utilize. So real rapid growth. Hang on to that point. The next point is in regards to our culture. Like many of your organizations out there, we all strive to hire the best people. We all strive to make sure we value excellence and foundations of respect and inclusion and diversity. But at Netflix, we do have some unique things, I think, that I wanted to call out to give you a little context about why we approach things our way. The first one is a concept of freedom and responsibility. These are elements you can find on our culture memo on our job site. It's simple. Get out of the way. Give the people the freedom. Trust them to make a responsible decision. And we do this to fight that python of really bad processes. A good example of this that we highlight is at Netflix, there's virtually no spending controls and very few signing contractual signing controls. And each employee is really expected to make good judgment whenever they procure a new consulting service, want to get a new app, or a new tool. And it really keeps us nimble. The next concept here is context, not control. And if we start on the left here, we start with Claire from House of Cards. Pretty Machiavellian, pretty micromanaging on her ascension to the presidency, in good ways and bad ways, but she really controlled every aspect on her way there. Versus Aragorn from The Fellowship, he was not commanding and controlling the dwarves and the elves and the hobbits. He was really there to help provide context to them as they all went on their journey to get that ring into Mordor. And like us at Netflix, we ensure that we have to make sure we give the right context at the right time so everybody can, with their freedom, make sure they're making the responsible decisions. And the last element here, I think, is very well highlighted by a great movie called Planes, Trains, and Automobiles from the 80s. The idea is called Highly Aligned Loosely Coupled. The premise of the movie is simple, is that Steve Martin just wanted to go home to Chicago for Thanksgiving. He got redirected, picked up John Candy along the way, and they both go, yep, we need to get back to Chicago. Through buses and trains, sometimes they had to go their own way. They figured it out, but they made it there through by hook or crook. And for us at Netflix, we spend a lot of time getting strategically aligned on what direction we want to go, but then we let the teams stay loosely coupled to go ahead and get their own destination, hopefully with less hijinks. So, what does that mean for an information security approach? Well, at Netflix, we really need to tackle that with guardrailing. We can't be gatekeepers. If we get in the way, it's going to run counterculture for how everybody at Netflix is operating, whether that's Reed, our VP of physical production, or an individual contributor on our finance teams. So I'll transition next into a high-level view of our studio structure. And what I'll do is I want to give credit to Chris Goss, who leads our studio and product innovation team, for this analogy. It's pretty simple. Netflix is a multifaceted business, like an airport. The air traffic control tower is the studio, and the productions are the airplanes. Basic concept that many of you know, the studio is responsible for landing the airplane safely. A lot of factors to get them to line up well. So let's see how that maps to some of the other studio models that are out there. In many others, there's organizational structures with a parent studio and these child entities, other sub-studios or production companies with large slates of content they're looking to produce. Each of these companies, these child entities, maintain their own leadership, their own hierarchy, culture, and operating technologies. Essentially, they're self-contained units with governance and financing, a lot of oversight coming from the parent. And these models work great. There's obviously a flurry of operational logistics, both at the micro level, but between that macro and micro level as well. At Netflix, though, we're trying to approach this as one company with really large content ambitions. we're making strategic investments to really create one globally connected studio for our entire slate. And, you know, as the new kid again on the studio block, we have that luxury of a greenfield approach, which allows us the freedom to make bets like this. And similar to the multiple aircraft types that you see up here, you know, we're producing various types of content as well. Features, series, international, documentaries, animation, kids and family. And as many of you may know, there's various idiosyncrasies in differentiate those production processes and workflows. And if you dig even further into one of those productions, you can still see that today, even for us, people still fall back to behavioral norms and practices that they've carried. Paper, email, phone calls, Excel tracking sheets, shuttle drives, still extremely prevalent. And what we've recognized is that the two sides today really don't have a lot of common shared infrastructure. You know, listening to Jim's talk around the 2030 vision, I think makes a lot of sense to us as well, where we look at things like collaboration, communication solutions, and data intelligence, and how do we get that information and that infrastructure shared between us as an online traffic studio and these currently offline productions and getting them brought more online into the ecosystem. And if we don't execute this strategy well, this picture could really turn into that picture. All right, rapid growth. We have a little bit of context around our studio structure as we're going for one globally connected studio. How do we align information security to this? So we needed to figure out a way to get all these teams to align. And you know, we have all these teams like many of you do, application security, detection response, risk and compliance, and they evolve with the streaming product evolution. And this is before we got into the business of a studio, a much different business than developing a consumer-facing product. And the folks that built, operated, and supported our streaming product, they grew up together. And they were really only one Kevin Bacon away from finding that right security partner. And, you know, the majority of our information security team is up in Los Gatos. They have fundamentally an engineering background. And, you know, the art studio business is here in LA, and it's global. And it was growing very quickly, and we needed to figure out a way to scale. And when we looked at these teams and we looked at our model, trying to figure out how to align kind of felt like this. I just saw my baby this morning, and she was still trying to do the same thing, unfortunately. So, how do we approach this problem? Remember the few key factors. Rapid growth. Here, I'm a young baby. At Netflix, I'm a middle-aged man. Well, actually, I am a middle-aged man as well. We have a very innovation-friendly culture. Freedom and responsibility. Context, not control. You want to go buy something? Yeah, go do it. That better be the responsible choice. And this can happen all over the place. Up, down, east, west, left, right. And we are going for one globally connected studio at a scale. We have massive content ambitions, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of titles. Great for innovation, right? Really great to be nimble. Really, really scary for security. We've used that adage over and over about herding cats. But when we looked across our landscape, it felt like there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cats, and they were wildly unpredictable. And I don't know, maybe too much catnip. But as a result, we recognized we needed a different approach. And for us, that approach was the studio information security team using an embedded security model. This concept is not new. Some of you may recognize it as a business information security officer, or BISO. But I think these models aren't really in widespread usage across a lot of security organizations today. In some cases, like in insurance conglomerates or even some studios, that BISO plays a function between the parent organization and some of those child entities between those security teams and acts as a liaison. In financial institutions, you see them really embedded in investment lines of business to ensure auditory and regulatory compliance. Makes sense. But for us at Netflix, we needed to take a look at that unique culture and how we're approaching our studio and figure out, okay, if we're going to go with an embedded model, how do we go about it? And so for those of you here who are looking for, you know, how to secure the latest embedded hardware within your Lime or Bird scooters, this is not that embedded security talk. I'm sure we can find that at Black Hat or DEF CON at some point next year. All right, so we have studio information security teams. It's really composed of a bunch of security partners. What's a partner? Well, take a look at this example. Giovanni Ribisi played the medic Irwin Wade in the movie Saving Private Ryan. And what we learned through this is, you know, he was there to not only treat the Rangers in the field should they get injured, but he was embedded in there to ensure their health and wellness along their mission to save Private Ryan. And in order for him to do that, he had to have a first-class understanding of how the Rangers operated. If he didn't know that, he would have probably gotten in their way. He needed to have trust with those Rangers as well. He was part of that unit. And in order to develop that trust, they had direct lines of communication. He was in there with them, eating, breathing, sleeping, fighting with them. And of course, the medic is never going to stop the Rangers on their mission. He's not going to block them on the path of which they want to go. He's really there to be an enabler and a supporter. And for us, we look at those ideas of first-class advocacy and understanding, trust, communications, and true enablement for our security partners as well. All right. So now let's go back to this picture. We understand why we need an embedded security model. We have a brief silhouette of what a partner looks like. Where do we deploy them? And if you recall, our goal is that one globally connected studio. And like I mentioned before, with the aircrafts, we have a lot of different content types that have those deltas or idiosyncrasies that make those production flows slightly different. And if our studio, though, chose not to really structure like this, because it wouldn't give us that advantage of global connection. So what the business decided to do was to align like this, which really puts the business functions, forcing them to take a look at all the different content types to figure out how to unify their workflows, their culture, their operating technologies, in order to scale with the business as more and more of our productions, particularly, are scaling globally. And so for us, we take our security partners, or BISOs, or some people call them mini CISOs, and we drop them in and we embed them in with those teams. And we expect them, just like Irwin Wade, to have that first-class understanding to live, eat, and breathe with them. Another interesting element that I think is unique about security is that we are one of the few organizations in any company that are really privileged to have that entire look across a company and say, understand how it truly functions. Why? Because we're worried about what goes bump in the night or risks wherever they may land. Finance, creatives, physical production, HR, doesn't matter. By having our partners embedded along each of these business lines, what it does is it allows them to really share that information much quicker and much more rapid when we see common patterns start to emerge, or when we see a solution work in one area that may be applicable in another. All right, so what we know now, the brief silhouette of a partner, we know where we embed them and why we embed them along those business functional lines. What does an embedded security partner actually do? It all starts here, the game of risk. Risk is a really hard thing to do, but we're making a really strong effort to help a data-driven and quantified method to really help prioritize those risks. And what our security partners do by embedding with them is really cut through a lot of that difficult translation work around loss events, risk scenarios, impact, and help get them calibrated so we can start to compare apples to apples across these risk scenarios. We've dealt with examples like PII on our subscriber side. Well, what about the metric ton of talent PII that flows through a studio? How do we start to bring those two together so we have a unified and converged way to control that? And when I say control, I mean as security controls. What about the risk of other data sets that are emerging? Many of you may have certain risk postures for them. These are new for us. Shooting locations for sensitive titles, confidential marketing campaign information, analytics that really help give insights to our creatives on the deal-making process. These are new and rapidly evolving. Again, 50% tenure, so you can imagine the metric ton of new data sets that emerge every day for business needs. This is a content protection summit. We obviously, this team is a very deep and invested in how we think about the risks around pre-release content security. For major tentpoles at theaters, you know, for theatrical release, there's a pretty good and reasonable sentiment out there that there's a strong correlation between pre-release content leaks and box office revenue. That makes sense. But what about a subscriber video on demand service like Netflix that has a large catalog? Do we see as strong or a slightly weaker correlation between a pre-release content leak of a singular tentpole title as it affects our subscriber growth and retention? And we're working through that calculus to figure out, does that make sense for us as well? In addition, you know, we still need to consider the talent, the content producers, the showrunners, the writers. There are secretive aha moments. There are unique elements about things that they want to keep confidential. How do we start to factor those in as well at a slate of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of titles? So our team is really working through the development of a data-driven method to help take those factors in as we identify them so we can take a look at that large slate and start to let the more obvious ones really paint a better picture of where we need to focus our investments. The next area is what we call taming the Kraken. As many of you may know, we're rapidly growing. We're strategically aligned on where we want to go as a singularly global connected studio. But at the same time, we recognize people with their freedom and responsibility in these early maturity days, lots of solutions are going to emerge, and they're going to bonk around each other, and they're going to be duplicative, and they're going to reduce out. Well, what our team needs to do is embed on those front lines, because they're not just in-house built tools from our product team, but they're also third-party tools and industry standards and unique things that the post-production or the visual effects or the creative production teams want to bring in on their own. And with their freedom and responsibility, they do that to see if it works. We're okay with them bringing them in, but let's let it fail fast or succeed quickly. And what we do with our partners is really take a look at those concepts to make sure that we're getting them clicked into what we call our security paved roads or our best practices. Particularly on the third-party tool side, our team really focuses more on the singular adoption into common patterns of authentication, authorization, logging, and controls around playback solutions. And while our application security team really focus on the same implementation of those, but with our full stack engineers as they develop those elements in-house. But it's our team that really looks to build those principles and make sure we're all driving towards that common practice together. Another area is that our security partners, when they embed, they can start to discover what's not working. A few years ago, we actually made a pretty sizable de-investment into centralized endpoint management. We have a very strong, we're a cloud-first, SaaS-based shop with a very strong zero-trust ethos. But what we decided to do was place a lot more of our investments into other controls, particularly identity. And I think, and I agree with Jim and a lot of those other folks, that is fundamentally a place where you need to make stronger and stronger investments. And that worked well for the freedom and the liberty and the experience of our product engineering teams. But then animation folks came, and visual effects folks came, and they're artists. And they're like, we don't want to manage this stuff. What are you doing? Can you just take care of this and make it secure by default? And we're like, oh my God, okay, well, this is a new demographic and species. How do we handle that? By emerging and embedding our security partners on that front line, they catch that signal very, very early and help us reshape. All right, so you got Grandpa Abe Simpson here, old man yelling at the cloud. And we need to also make sure that our businesses don't feel like they're just yelling into the void. As many of you all know, we're not just here to buy down OWASP top 10s or talk about the next forensic watermarking solutions. A lot of these solutions happen at the workflow level, at the business process level. Our partners need to be there on the front lines to really help shape them, whether that is, I think somebody mentioned earlier, the shaping of vetting process for external identities, let's say in the publicity realm, or trying to normalize, which is very early for us, the idea of what is sensitive and what is not from a pre-release content security perspective as it flows from physical to post-production to marketing to publicity to a group that we call creative production, which is the folks that make titles come to life on our service. They make their own trailers and images as well. We mentioned the demand signal gathering ones before, but how else are we, other examples of that are maybe we have somebody in our post-prod side for series that is working with a pretty large set of post-prod shops. How do we get them to start thinking about MFA adoption, whether that's in our ecosystem when they utilize our applications or their own? And then finally, at Netflix, we really don't believe that mass targeted security awareness is really effective. It can tend to become white noise and a bit spammy. So what we really try to do is really target that education awareness to the places that need it. Again, give them the context in the right moment. And what we ask our security partners to do is to really make sure they have that pulse so that that targeted awareness campaign really makes it and resonates home to the very specific people or groups. Creative partners, everywhere. So I had no idea how a movie was made, or a film, or a series. And I'm like, okay, it's pretty basic, I get it. Studio and some people in a production. And then you get all these people that come to this tribe in a production. And then there's the post-production shops. Then there's the creative agencies who handle those assets for marketing campaigns and publicity and so on and so on. And next thing you know, you're at orders of magnitude larger. And so it really does take a massive tribe to make a single piece of great content. And for us, what we've recognized with that scale is that we really needed to unify that guidance across the board. Whether you're production, post-production shop, or a creative agency, we're really looking to take an initial effort on unifying what we think are pretty basic, simple best practices. By and large, a majority of them lean towards zero trust approaches. Strong investment in your identity as perimeter. Place great trust in cloud-first and SaaS-based applications, those great internet-facing controls. Look at adaptive authentication based off of different heuristics. Those are elements that we think are really important. The second area that we focus on is really on enablement. And for us at Netflix, as we consider our scale and we consider the order of magnitude, audits personally just weren't going to be a best approach for us. And while we absolutely recognize the value of organizations like TPN and centrally collecting that information, what we choose to do, you know, instead of all of us coming to some poor shop and saying, hey, give us all your info, what we want to do is take information like that and really help distill down for us. Let's just understand who are our vendors, what are their relationships with us. Let's get some basic information about them so we can really, again, target our guidance with them as well. And we do that in the same way as at Irwin Wade. We need to develop a trusted relationship with our partners, post shops and creative agencies and productions. A great example I was told is the idea of a primary care physician versus a life insurance doctor. I may tell my primary care physician, like, yeah, I kind of eat 4 or 5 cheeseburgers a week. I'm not really looking at you, Brian. I know you're a big fan of cheeseburgers. but, you know, if I'm getting a life insurance policy, I may tell him, like, yeah, I only eat 1 or 2 a week, you know? And we want to make sure that that they look at us as a good primary care doctor and trust us, to be honest. And the last place is clearly we can't be everywhere at the same time. We have to prioritize our risk engagements. Go back to that concept of how do we stratify the sensitivity of productions. This will really help us focus where we're going to make our enablement investments into. So, a liaison. A liaison is a binding agent generally made of egg yolks and cream, generally for sauces. So now we're transitioning into the cooking part of the show. But I actually learned that. I had no idea. My wife informed me of this. And so what our security partners do in the world of incident response is really play that liaison. When the ultimate it hits the fan, our incident commanders from our detection and response team really take the lead as the driving the assembly of the investigation team and ensuring the investigation is working methodically. There's a lot of techno speak, a lot of security babble. Our partners need to be there with our creatives, our VPs of production, post-production VFX to make sure they're getting the right context to ensure that when it's really scary, they have the confidence that things are going well so they can relay that to their external partners. In addition, we need to get that context from them about what really matters and what doesn't to bring that back to our investigation team that sometimes we also play a part of, particularly on the third-party tool side, so we can hone our investigations in on the right place. We also provide an escalation channel for our productions, whether those are self or partner managed. When things go bump in the night, we don't want them to feel like they don't have a lifeline. We all have shared skin in the game. And so we want to make sure that they have an ability to escalate to our team. And then finally, we handle a lot of the small fires together. The reason that's really important is, and I'll give you a good example. We had around 5 or 6 different incidents that really seemed just like low-grade attacks, some social engineering, some leaks, blah, 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 blah. They all seemed very disconnected. At the 7th one of our security partners really honed and said, wait, this feels really, really common. And they started taking a deeper look immediately at the TTPs and then at the IOCs. And we recognized, and this is one that was separate from the shift conversation, this was a very targeted attack from a very specific bad actor against us. And we're like, wow. And if that security partner didn't have that context in that particular business across those small incidents, we would not have found that repeating pattern as quickly. So what I wanted to do here today was just to set the table with you all. We haven't started a lot of great conversations. Again, we're new. And what I wanted to do was just say, hey, we're here. We love to share information. And this gives you a lot of great context, hopefully, around how we're beginning to operate and emerge as a young security team and as a younger studio. So I want to share just some brief thoughts from about what's happening on our team that we'll hopefully look to share with you in the future. The first concept is Bodhi. I've mentioned this a few times. It's the idea when you have a slate of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of titles, how do you start to get a real data-driven method to stratify the sensitivity around that content? Whether it's based on investments, projected impact, talent relation factors, or other unique factors that we're looking to capture. The The second one is an idea of studio brain. There's a lot of different factors that go into the concept of a production and what makes it risky, right? Partners, what are the ecosystems that they're using? Are they helping, you know, adopting more of our singularly connected type of workflows or something else? We're looking to figure out how we start to stratify that through quantitative methods. And the last one is an idea called GHOST. So not only are we unifying the concept of supply chain risk management for us, but we're trying to do that with our third-party risk team and break this one singular supply chain risk management program for Netflix, period. So some key takeaways. One, take a look at yourselves, at your companies, at your culture. And there is a culture there. Even if it's not written on a wall or a memo, there is a culture. That culture really does need to shape your security approach. Two, embed deeply. If you don't have context of what's going on in the business, you're gonna not be like Erwin Wade, but there was that other character in Saving Private Ryan, Upham, who really didn't understand how the Rangers operated. And he got more in the way, and things got really, really bad when Upham got in the way. And then three, trust and enablement. You really have to trust not just the business, but the partners that the business engages. And we believe, at least at Netflix, that a gate guardrailing method is really gonna be a better approach than a gatekeeping one. Just making sure you're still watching. Thank you very much.
Ben Lim, Blim, thank you so much. Excellent. And also love all those references. Those aren't pillows.